spoke about a couple of issues, which we'll go through briefly again tonight, just to make sure we haven't done pat. And those are the issues of the status of Shemitah in our day and age. We said, according to most poskim, Shemitah in our day and age is the Rabbanan. That's a starting point, because if Shemitah would be the Oraisa, there'd be no way to take off the Kedusha of the land. It's only when the Kedusha of the land is the Rabbanan that one can begin to speak about ways in which the Kedusha of the land vis-a-vis mitzvahs can be removed. So therefore, we are lucky in that sense that the overwhelming majority of poskim hold that Shvi'is is the Rabbanan. It's true there are a couple of poskim who hold that Shemitah in our day and age is the Oraisa. It's required by the Torah. On the other end, there are a couple of poskim who hold that Shemitah in our day and age is only a nice minhag, a minhag chasidim. So therefore, those two extremes balance each other out and will cancel each other out, would be a better word, and we're left with the middle ground, which is that Shvi'is in our day and age is the Rabbanan. The second assumption we have to make in order to allow the heter mechir, in order to allow the sale of land to a goy to circumvent Shvi'is, Shemitah, is to say that in our day and age, that the Kedusha is only the Rabbanan, we say that the sale of land to an Arab, or the ownership of the land by any type of goy, really, is a reason for the Kedusha of the land to fall off. Now, as I say, it's necessary to say that the Kedusha of land is only the Rabbanan in order to say this, but it's important also to realize that not everybody agrees with this. There was the Mabit, who says that even if the land is sold to an Arab, the Kedusha does not fall off. It's the Abkas Rochel and the Kesef Mishnah, both works written by Rabbi Yosef Karo, which state that when the land is sold to an Arab or any other guy, that the Kedusha of the land vis-a-vis the mitzvahs, which have to do with the land of Israel, it falls off, and therefore all sorts of halachos which have to do with the Kedusha of the land do not apply. Now, we mentioned last week that even in the Beis Yosef, it's not at all clear that Rabbi Yosef Karo meant that the Kedusha of the land itself falls off. Rather, it's possible that all he meant was that the Kedusha which applies to the trees and to the fruit and such like falls off. And we'll see a ramification of that distinction later on in the evening when we get down to the brass tacks of what the Heter Mechira allows and what it does not allow. So those are the 2 points which we covered last week in detail. This week we're going to start from the third point, which is that goyim are not allowed to have chanoya in Eretz Yisrael. Now chanoya really in modern Hebrew translates as parking. Right, the chanaya in modern Hebrew is parking, and that's really a good term, because it means that goyim are not allowed to be parked in Eretz Yisrael. We'll see what that means in later on when we see Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's diuk, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's point that in the Chumash the Isser is phrased lo sechaneim, don't let them park in the land, as opposed to lo timkar lohem karka. He never said don't sell them land. It just says, don't let them park in the land. And we'll see what difference that makes later on. Okay? In the meantime, before we get to that, the question is, what kind of goyim are we forbidden to sell the land or give parking spots in the land of Israel to? The poskim say, quite clearly, in Masechet Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah says, and the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah says, that we cannot allow any goy to settle in the land of Israel unless he is a ger toshav. Now, ger toshav is a goy who accepted upon himself the 7 mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. He accepted upon himself to keep all those 7 mitzvahs, according to the Rambam, in front of a beis din, in front of a special court which is convened for that purpose. Now, in our day and age, we do not have a beis din which functions in that capacity any longer. The halacha is that our batei din only function in the capacities which the batei din at the time of Chazal allotted to them. And the halachic terminology for that is shlichusayu kavdinan. We perform their mission which they gave over to us. And one of the missions they gave over to us was not ger toshav, for a very simple reason. That ger toshav applies only when there is a yovel. The Chumash links the two of them. And therefore, since in our day and age there is no yovel, therefore, in our day and age, there is no ger toshav as well. If that is the case, then it would seem that one is not allowed to allow any goy in our day and age to live in the land of Israel, because no goy in our day and age can meet the criterion of becoming a ger toshav. We simply do not have the apparatus to accept ger toshav in our day and age. So, therefore, by extension, none of them should be allowed to live in the land of Israel. What? I don't recall offhand. The But the Rambam Perek Vav of Hilchos Avodah Zarah says that Halacha Vav says, maybe he brings it down here. No, he doesn't bring down why. He just brings down. Although it has not been formally accepted by a Beis Din as Gerut Tosha, which would be not be possible since the Jubilee is no longer observed in our days. So I don't recall offhand where it comes from, but that is the halacha. So in any event, since that's the case, we wouldn't be allowed to let any guy live in Israel in our day and age. However, the Ravid argues on this. The Ravid says that that's not true. It's true that in order to achieve the absolute and complete status as Ger Toshav, one really has to undergo this procedure of acceptance in front of a Beis Din, which we no longer have. However, says the Ravid, that is not true in terms of their dwelling in the land. In order for them to be allowed to dwell in the land of Israel, they only have to perform the seven mitzvahs, which a Ben Noach, a goy, must perform. They do not need formal acceptance in front of Beis Din. The reason for this is because the Gemara says that you shouldn't lo suchanem pen yachtiu lo schabit lest they cause you to sin. And since they are following the mitzvah of a Ben Noach, they're not going to lead you astray to sin. They are reasonably civilized and decent individuals. So, therefore, the Ravid says that anybody who keeps seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, the seven mitzvahs precepts which are given to the sons of Noach, is allowed to live in Israel, even though he has not undergone the Gerut Toshav procedure. So, if that's the case, perhaps we can say that Arabs, Muslims, who do meet the criterion of a seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, they do fulfill the seven mitzvahs commanded to b'nei Noach, they would be allowed to live in the state of Israel in our day and age. We wouldn't have to kick them out, according to the Ravid. That's what follows. However, what doesn't follow is that I can sell them land. The poskim make a distinction, and they say, it's true. The Ravid said you're allowed to have them live there. But who says you're allowed to sell them land and give them ownership over the land of Israel? Rav Kook says in his discussion of the Heter Mechira that they're analogous. If a guy is allowed to live in Israel, where's he going to live? He's going to live in midair? By definition, if a guy is allowed to live in Israel, you're allowed to sell him land. Obviously, all those who hold of the Heter Mechira hold that this is permissible.
That may be the Kesher.
What?
Kesher,
since it's only temporary, perhaps. I don't want to say because I don't remember.
I don't know.
But it could be. So Rav Kook holds that there's they're analogous, that whoever's allowed to live in the land can own the land. Others disagree. Others hold that that's not true. It's possible to draw a distinction. They can live in your backyard. You can rent them land. You can rent them a house, but they cannot be sold land in the land of Israel. Yeshiva living there is permissible for a guy who keeps the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, and however, mechir ownership is not permissible. Then, of course, there are others, the Netziv, as a matter of fact, who says it's not true. He says the literal letter of the law, according to the Rambam, is you have to be a true Ger Toshav in order to live in the land of Israel. It says in the Netziv a very interesting point. If you take a look here on page 2 at the bottom, it starts on the bottom right. He starts bringing down the Netziv. The Dayan Grunfeld brings down the Netziv, and he says, "I'm starting from the sixth line from the bottom. The Netziv very decidedly holds the view that today Mohammedans, Yishmaelim, cannot be considered as Gerei Toshav, and to sell land to an Arab in Eretz Yisrael would mean to infringe a biblical prohibition. In view of this biblical prohibition, so the argument of the Netziv runs, the whole legal device of the Heter Mechira, turning to page 3, falls to the ground." Moreover, as according to most halachic shmita in our time is of rabbinic character, what is the point of trying to evade the rabbinic law by infringing a biblical law? In this context, the Netziv uses his famous simile, am I pronouncing that word correctly? That the protagonists of the Heter Mechira are to be compared to one who flees from a wolf and falls into the claws of a lion. The Netziv takes great pains to disprove the allegation that a non-Jew who observes the seven Noahide laws in our time is to be considered as a Ger Toshav, to whom the soil of the Holy Land may be sold. And he points out that as long as there is no formal acceptance of the Gentile as a Ger Toshav, which except it is not possible in our days in the absence of the observance of the Jubilee, the sale of soil in the Holy Land to a non-Jew remains a biblical prohibition. And then he goes on to discuss more about this issue. Chasnish, of course, agreed to the Netziv. Chasnish also presented an additional svara, which I'm not going to get into this evening, which is that an emissary of the chief rabbinate who sells the land to a goy is considered to be a shliach l'dvar avera, an agent for a matter of avera which does not work. But the Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank refuted him. I don't want to get into that this evening. In any event, nonetheless, there's a hitter to sell to a Muslim over a Christian, as you all can understand. What's the hitter? Why is it better? He's not an Oved Avodah Zarah. Christians are Oved Avodah Zarah. Christians are not allowed to live in the land. It's an Israel mamish to have a Christian live in the land of Israel. However, Muslims could be, according to the Ravid and others, are allowed to live there. Perhaps they're not allowed to own land, but they're allowed to live there, so therefore it's best to sell to a Muslim. However, Rav Kook, in the 1910, I think, sold the lands of Baron Rothschild to a Christian, because Baron Rothschild would not accept, trust anybody else to give him the land back at the end of Shemitah. So what heter was there for Rav Kook to sell? He sold to a Christian Arab, I think an Arab. So what heter was there for him to sell the land to a Christian Arab as opposed to a Muslim Arab? So the answer is that most poskim hold that this, the selling to a Muslim doesn't really override the problem. Like the Netziv says, it's still a problem. You can't sell a goy land in the land of Israel. It's a forbidden Isser Daraisa, can't do it. So what is the resolution? A temporary sale. They sell the land for 2 years. Now, I'm not sure exactly where the two-year period comes from. I couldn't really figure it out. I think it's probably because of two reasons. A, it shouldn't look like such a outright ruse that we only sell for the year of Shemitah. Besides that, I think that it's possible that there's certain things which have Kedusha Shvi'is, which theoretically only start really growing after Shemitah year. In other words, things which were just took root before the end of Shemitah and continue growing into the eighth year still have potential Kedusha Shvi'is. So for those things, for those plants, they extended the sale for an additional year beyond the year of Shemitah itself. Perhaps that's the reason. In any event, the poskim want to say that a temporary sale does not constitute the Isser of Lo Sechonim. And here's where Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's deal comes in. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, it says in the Pasuk Lo Sechonim. It doesn't say Lo Simkar. I think this is brought down here. Where does it begin here? Yeah, he brings down here on page 205, it's the bottom of page 3 on the right. He brings down in about 8 lines down into the paragraph. On the other hand, such a temporary sale does not infringe the prohibition of Lo Sechonim, because it does not lead to the permanent settlement, chanaya, of the non-Jewish purchaser. The wording of Maimonides, when he discusses the prohibition of Lo Sechonim, reads as follows. Lo titen lem chanaya bakarka shim lo yam karka shiva sami shiva sarayhi. Do not give them an opportunity to settle on the soil. For if they have no landed property in the land of Israel, their settlement can only be of a temporary nature. This wording of Maimonides seems to support the view that a temporary sale does not come under the prohibition of Lo Sechonim. For whilst a temporary sale is certainly a legally valid sale, it does not mean encouraging settlement in the sense of Talmudic Chanoya Baretz. So therefore, a temporary sale is okay. Now, I have to tell you, the honest truth is that this is not so simple. A lot of later sources, Achronim, hold that if you sell a piece of land temporarily, it's tantamount to what? What would you think it's tantamount to? No. Tantamount in English? What's it tantamount to? Temporary sales. Tantamount to a lease. And if a temporary sale is a lease, that's no good. Because a lease is not true ownership. Who really owns a leased house? The owner. So if you hold that a temporary sale is tantamount to a lease, then you have a problem because the kedusha of the land did not fall off. So this is a big machlokas. Obviously, those who are matir. What? Mechiras chametz, we don't make a mechir l'zman. It's not a mechir for 8 days. We sell to the goy forever. We say, but there's a possibility we'll buy it back from you after after Pesach. We ever seen a Rav sell to actual Goy? That's what he says. He says, this is sold to forever. There's a good chance, and he probably winks when he says that, although it's not necessary because I'm sure he's been primed ahead of time. He says, there's a good chance that we'll buy it back for you right after Passover is over, but the sale is a forever sale. Here they can't do that because they say it's a sale forever, but it's a good chance to buy back to you after Shemitah. Then right now they transgress the biblical prohibition of Lo Sechani. So you can't do that here. See? By Mechiras Chayim, there's no way for you to sell any movable object to a Goy. Sell all the chametz in the world to the Goy, and you don't transgress any Yisr D'oraisa. You can sell all land and chutzlorts that you want to a Goy, and never transgress an Yisr D'oraisa. You sell land and Eretz Yisrael to a Goy, Yisr D'oraisa, you get flogged for it. This man should base on, you know, if there would be a Sanhedrin, they'd take you out and they give you lashes for it.
You can tell them
maybe a good chance to buy back.
Yeah.
So we can't do that thing which we do by Mechiras Chametz. So therefore, the only Yetzer is to sell for a temporary amount of time. Oh, there we have the Shaila. It's a Lom de Shaila. Are those who hold of the Hetter Mechira hold, there is such a thing as a temporary sale distinct from a lease? Those who oppose say a temporary sale is a lease, and therefore it's no good. There is there are two ways of getting out of this problem altogether, though. One of which was applicable once, but is no longer possible to do. That is, in the early Heter Mechira days, last week I called by mistake Reb Nosson Tzvi Hertz, it was Reb Naftali Tzvi Hertz, and the chief rabbi of Yafo sold in 1896 and 1903. His son-in-law sold in 1903. When they did the sales, what they sold was not the land itself. He sold the trees. And they sold the trees to the guy, and they said, with the specific express intent that you must uproot the trees. If you don't uproot the trees, the sale is valid nonetheless. But you must uproot the trees. So that way, what they're really selling was the trees and not the land. Hi, the guy didn't uproot the trees. All right, but that's not my fault. I told him he could uproot them. I demanded that he uproot them. He didn't. But in the meantime, what was sold? Only the trees themselves and not the land. It's not, nowadays, it's impossible to do that. Because now they don't just sell, now they have to sell all types of land in which all sorts of melacha is going to be done itself. Not just the trees. If you understand what I'm saying, in those that day, that time, they were able to sell the trees because all the Jews only are involved in work in orchards, and work in orchards only necessitates trees, which goyim can buy. They'll buy the trees for lots. What? They have almost no wheat fields because most of the stuff was what we're talking about with the wineries and the vineyards were for Baron Rothschild. That's really what most of the land was in that time, in the early years. Later on, when they came to include grain and vegetables and stuff like that, where you can't sell, they don't sell the vines or the stalks, right? You have to sell the land itself in order that you be able to cultivate. So then they stopped doing that. I don't think it's possible. I think that where yet...
You're uprooting especially if you're growing something like carrots, you're definitely uprooting.
No, but they have to, there's the catch. When do you have to uproot them, the trees? Before Shemitah. Yeah. In order for that sale to work, the guy has to uproot. You have to make the condition with the guy. Your trees, you have to uproot them before Shemitah.
Therefore, the 2 years is really 6 and 7, you're not the 7 and 8 years.
Well, it's not the 6, no. In that case over there, it's not the 6, it's part, the last moment of the 6th. Last moment of the 6th, and then the 7th and part of the 8th, right. But in any event, you're right, they sold it, obviously, Erev Rosh Hashanah. A month before Rosh Hashanah, saying that, and they said for 2 years from today. So in that case, really, the guy, in order for that sale to work, the guy would have to uproot the trees before Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah. Because otherwise, zap, the moment Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah enters, what happens? Becomes Kodesh B'Kedusha Shviis. It's too late already. So they have to say to the guy, we're selling you these trees that you should uproot them before Rosh Hashanah. If you don't uproot them, it's not our problem, but you should know that they're your trees, not ours. We want you to uproot them before Shabbos, so they don't have Kedusha Shviis.
And therefore,
if the guy happens to leave them in the land, they're his trees.
And it grows fruit.
The fruit is not Kodesh B'Kedusha Shviis, because all those trees belong to him. But if it's, let's say you want to sell the guy the stalks of grain, which are only going to really grow and be harvestable during Shemitah, right? Because before Shemitah you have nothing. They plant the seedlings a few days before the planting season is now. Elul time, before the rains. So there's nothing to sell him now. What are you going to sell him? You can only sell him the stalks which are going to grow when? After Sukkot, after it starts raining. By then it's too late. Shemitah's already taken hold of this. So maybe you'll sell him the seedlings now in the ground. It means you have to sell him the ground itself. So it's not going to work. So Mimela, that Eitzah of just selling the trees no longer works in our day and age, because they have to sell the grain fields as well. But there is an Eitzah which does apply. Rabbi Yechiel Michutz Kaczynski said, they should not make it a Mechir Lezman. They should make it a temporary sale. They should make it, like you mentioned before, that was the condition. They should say, I'm selling you now a sale forever on the condition that you give it back to me after 2 years. Which in fact would be valid by Mechiras Chametz as well, although we don't do it that way. But the way the sale is a valid sale. And it's not a Mechir Lezman, it's not a temporary sale, so it doesn't enter into the problem of a lease. It's just that there's a condition attached to it, that after 2 years it'll return to me. And Rabbi Yechiel Michutz Kaczynski felt that that condition is sufficient to prevent the problem of Lo Suchanim from applying. It's true the sale is a sale forever, but since I attach a condition, then in 2 years it'll revert to me, so therefore that's not an issue of Lo Suchanim. That's what Rabbi Yechiel Michutz Kaczynski said. There are a couple of other weaker heterim which are employed here, which don't really hold water. One is that they sell the land always to a guy who already owns land in the land of Israel. Why? Because that way, well, we're not giving him now Chanoya Bekarka. He already owned land. Now he's just getting more land, but he's already parked. So therefore, we're not really giving him more Chanoya. This is not a very good heter, because Lamaisa, it seems from the postgame that every stitch of land you give the guy is an additional Isser. Besides that, they say, now this seems at first to be weird, but it really holds more water than you might think, because something Marvin pointed out to me last night. They say that, well, listen, what is the Talmud decree? What's the logic of the mitzvah, of the prohibition of Lo Suchanim? The logic of prohibition is because you are giving Eretz Yisrael to Goy, which is forbidden, right? By the way, I want to point out to you something. This is just totally on a tangent. They are the giving Yericho and Aza to Arafat or whoever else they're going to give it to does not present the problem of Lo Suchanim per se. The very fact that the Goyim own Yericho at the moment is Lo Suchanim. In other words, the Isser of Lo Suchanim, the Halachic Isser of Lo Suchanim, they're transgressing already. As long as they don't kick the Arabs out of the land of Israel, regardless of whether the military is in Yericho or not in Yericho, they transgress Lo Suchanim. By just all they're doing, by withdrawing the military from this area and giving them autonomy, is just recognizing the status quo of the Avera they're committing by not kicking all the Arabs out of the land of Israel. But that is really to be Mekayim the Halacha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you leave the Arabs and if you leave the Goyim in the land of Israel, they're going to be thorns in your side. Torah already warned us thousands of years ago, and that's what we saw with the Plishtim and the Knanim. They're always Torahs from Israel. Because of this problem of having them there and them claiming their rights to the land. So Avatar said, forget it, Lo Suchanim, kick them out. Don't have Rachmanis on them. The Lashon Lo Suchanim also has to do with Chen. They shouldn't have grace in your eyes. So that is, so they transgressed long ago. When at the moment they didn't kick out the Arabs after 48 and after 67, they transgressed the Isser. Now from a logic standpoint, at least in my humble opinion, they're not transgressing any additional Isser. Okay? So in any event, as it may, so they wanted to say the Pesach wanted to say, listen, what's the reason why they're not allowed to live and leave them there? Because they're going to detract from our ownership of the land of Israel. Well, if we observe Shemitah in our day and age, then we're going to all have to leave the land of Israel. Why? Because we're going to undergo economic ruin. So we're all going to have to become Yordim. So therefore, it is in the long run fortifying our hold on Eretz Yisrael by giving the guy the ownership for a year or two. Now, at first, it sounds very far-fetched. I mean, give me a break. Because you're not going to leave Israel just because 1 year you can't plant the crops. So you'll get stalker from the UJA, just like every other year you have to get from the UJA. So this year you need a little bit more. But in any event, there is, though, a precedent for this. Marvin pointed out to me, which is what you were speaking about last night? Which is the Rabbanan? Can you be a Mevatel because of Yishuv
Aretz? Well, one of the things about Yishuv Aretz is to Amil Anachi to write.
Yeah, that I know. Which is the other one you mentioned?
This is the Raisa of Abbas the Kohen. In other words, I mean, Chazara Oker, the Mitzvah of Bikurim, on a land that you sold to a goy, I mean, it's part of the Shaka of Tara Dimor, and then it's
also a knot.
So then you shouldn't think that.
Okay, that's a little more.
And therefore, you will not be thinking of selling to a goy.
Okay, that's a little bit more complicated. Let's just use one from Shabbos. There's halacha in Hilchos Shabbos, which says that you are allowed to tell a goy, according to some versions of the Rishonim, you're even allowed to do this yourself on Shabbos. Well, I'll get to that in a moment. You're allowed to tell a goy to write a bill of sale on land in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos. You're allowed to transgress the Isser D'Rabbanan of telling a goy to do a melacha in order to buy land from a goy in Israel on Shabbos, b'pnei Yishuv Aretz, in order to sell the land of Israel. Some folks can say that you're even allowed to write it yourself with a shinui, such as to write it with your right hand if you're a lefty, your left hand if you're righty, to write it in cursive script as opposed to ksav ashuris, whatever the case may be. We see here very clearly that you're allowed, in the certain circumstances, to transgress the Rabbanans for Yishuv Aretz. So it would be possible, perhaps, to apply this logic here, that if it could be proved that Yishuv Aretz would suffer in the long run, then perhaps one could be Mevatel l'shmita for that reason and sell the land to an Arab. I'll come back to that later in the evening. But it's not as far-fetched as it seems at first glance. At first glance, it's ludicrous. Chazal Torah says, keep Shemitah, who cares? Yishuv Aretz is nice, but it's not the Shemitah. But we see that would be true if it'd be a din d'oraisa. But in our day and age, it's only a din d'rabbanan. So maybe there is room to speak about this. We'll come back to this in a few minutes. Okay, the next problem which is involved in Shemitah is that the sale is not registered in the taboo. The taboo is a Turkish or Arabic term for the land registry. Now, the state of Israel obviously does not register the sale of the entire state to an Arab. By the way, it was important to note, they don't sell gardens, only fields. If somebody has a garden, a backyard garden, in the state of Israel, all halachas of Shemitah apply to the garden. It's your headache. Even if you rely on the Hetem Mechira for a field, they don't sell, gardens, vegetable patches. They don't sell that kind of stuff. So when I say all the state of Israel, it really means all the agricultural fields in the state of Israel. Okay? So the problem is that the state of Israel does not register this sale. All other sales have to be registered in the taboo, in the, the land office, whatever it's called. So wherever they keep the deeds. But this one is not. So is it a valid sale? We have Halacha, which tells us in the Chesh Mishpat and Siman Reish Tzadik Siv Zayin, which tells us very clearly that if I contract with you a sale orally in a place where normally the sales are contracted in written documents, that sale is not valid. We say there's a shortcoming in smichus das. They weren't really serious about the sale. Because since all sales are written down in that place, and this sale was not written down, it was just verbal, you really weren't serious. You didn't come to complete acquiescence and intent in making this sale. So therefore, other poskim say, based on this halachah chesh mishpat, it brings down from the Divrei Emes, says that that's true also in a case where the government requires certain procedures in order to effect the sale. If you do not follow those procedures, we say you're lacking in seriousness, intent, and complete acquiescence, and therefore the sale is not valid. So if that's the case, the same thing should be true about Shemitah. The sale is not written in the land registry like most sales are. Why should it be a valid sale? It shouldn't be valid at all. So, there what? Sorry, Mr. Michus Das. We'll get to Dina Machus itself in a moment. So this argument was, of course, discussed to a great extent by Mechiras Chametz. Because Mechiras Chametz presented very often the same problem. I'm going to show you some interesting history here. I hope I photocopied it. Take a look at page...
It doesn't have to be registered anywhere.
No, that's what you think. Page 4. First he gives an eitzah around it. In the bottom left, In the middle of the paragraph, there's a line which has the word however at the beginning of a line, starting from there. However, the same passage in Talmud states that where a written contract is customary, the payment of the money alone does not create a valid title to the land. Also states that where the partners to the contract or any of them explicitly stipulate that the sale of land should be valid without a written deed, then it is valid. All that is necessary, therefore, is that the parties to the sale of the land in connection with the Heta Mechira state that the sale should be effective with the help of modes of acquisition, kinyanim, other than the registration in the tabu. There is also another legal point in the favor of foregoing the registration. If somebody is anxious to dispose of property because of some inconvenience or embarrassment that causes him, we do not assume a lack of intent to sell, even if the usual forms of contract are not adhered to. This point arises not only with regard to the sale of land prior to the Shemitah, but also in connection with the sale of chametz prior to the festival of Passover. In both cases, the owner of either the land or the chametz is anxious to sell in order to avoid breaking the Jewish law, which he fears would happen, were he to continue to be the owner of the land or of the chametz. For this reason, the modes of sale and acquisition can and should be relaxed, and an intent to sell or buy construed where this would not be done in ordinary commercial sales. Nebuch, I don't know if that's true in our day and age, because most non-Orthodox farmers, the chilonim, really don't give a hoot. They don't have real intent to sell. They think the rabbis, the Orthodox, the datim, they want to do this, let them go ahead and do their nonsense. But I don't think they have true das, they don't have true intent to sell. But were they to have true intent to sell, and such as the religious kibbutzim, which do have true intent, then we would say that the intention proves sincerity, and therefore even, and seriousness, and intent, and acquiescence, and then even without the land registry, it should be good enough. And then he goes on and brings out a very interesting thing.
I think the idea there wasn't that they didn't use customary method of Mechira. I mean, they did use all the customary methods of Mechira. The only thing is that it still seems to be in Harama. So as far as the name Harama, it's not Harama.
Let me read further. I'm going to skip a paragraph now, and so I'll see something very interesting. The question of such religious purpose, such as to avoid Shemitah or Chometz, as relationship to the law of the land, Dina Machus is not confined to the sale of land in connection with Shemitah. It especially arose in the case of the sale of Chometz. Does such a sale for religious purposes have to comply with the law of the land in order to be halachically effective? The great halachist of the last century almost unanimously agreed that there is no need for that. The famous Chasam Sofer mentions in his responsa a case where Jewish informers denounced their fellow Jews to the government, accusing them of avoiding stamp duties in their contracts referring to the sale of chametz. The government, however, replied that in such purely religious matters, the stamp duty did not apply. And although the Gaon Reb Baruch Frankel had some doubts as to the validity of such contracts, which were not in conformity with the law of the land, the Chasam Sofer dispelled these doubts. On the basis of this response of the Chasam Sofer and other responsa, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank developed a theory that in purely religious matters, as contrasted to commercial transactions, the maxim of Dina Malchus Adina does not apply. It is noteworthy that the Chazon Ish, in spite of his strong opposition to the validity of the Heta Mechira on other grounds, is of the opinion that the lack of registration of the sale of the land of the Tabu does not invalidate it, because contracts in Jewish religious matters need only conform to the law of the Torah, unless the government of a country definitely objects to such contracts. According to Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, this view of the Chazon Ish is not merely his own personal view, but is based on and derived from decisions of earlier halachists, and then there's somebody who disputes that. But I think this is the point you were making before, Marvin, that in matters which have to do with religious law and our religious requirements, if as long as the government doesn't interfere, we are entitled to follow halacha, and halacha is valid. In other words, if the government displays animosity or protests, then in fact it voids the sale. But as long as they keep out of our affairs, what we'd say is they are willing to allow us to make even choshen mishpat, even monetary transactions, within the jurisdiction of our halacha, and therefore the sale is valid. Okay? Now, this seems to me to be a very big chiddush. I really find this to be a very big chiddush, and so did Rabbi Kalman Kahana, who maintains that in his later works, the Chazon Ish changed his opinion. But this is what the Chasam Sofer is saying, and the Chasam Sofer is a very, very, very great posek, that in matters of which where the government does not interfere, halacha is binding as long as both parties in the sale agree that halacha is the final arbiter of the validity of the transaction between the two of them. Okay? And it's interesting. Here we come to another point, which is a very great irony, extraordinary irony. Another way of addressing the problem of Dina Malchus HaDina is particularly important nowadays. I'll explain why in a moment. Some poskim say, as an additional logic for the heter mechira, here you see how tables are turned. They say it's an additional logic for the heter mechira. They say dina machusa dina doesn't apply in states run by Jews. In other words, the law of a state which has a Jewish government is not binding on the Jews who live within it. This is exactly what the Eda Charedis and others hold. And the old proponents of the Heter Mechira say, for the purpose of Heter Mechira, we hold the same thing. Not to evade taxes, or not to disobey the laws of the country, even though theoretically there's no distinction, but they want to say, well, what's your problem? Dina the Machusa, Dina, the law of the land dictates that all land sales have to be registered in the taboo. The law of land in a Jewish government is not valid anyway. Dafka Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? Because the Ran says, Eretz Yisrael, the Ran says, why is Eretz Yisrael different than Chutz La'aretz? Because we all, in Chutz La'aretz, we all, by living in the country, even in democracy, in essence become subjects of the country. And therefore we're required to live by its laws. Eretz Yisrael belongs to us. Each one of us owns Eretz Yisrael. We're not subjects. Ish tachas gafnov, ish tachas tein. Also, each one of us owns our portion in the land. And therefore, in order to live in the land of Israel, we don't have to subject ourselves to anybody else's government or jurisdiction. And therefore, we don't have to pay attention to the rulers of the country. Now, this is very interesting. Again, those who oppose the Heter Mechira would say, even in Eretz Yisrael, Dina Malchus Adina, even in the state of Israel, you have to follow the law of the land. And therefore, that's put into the taboo. Whereas those who are proponents of the Heter Mechira hold, no, since it's a Jewish government in the state of Israel, we don't have to pay attention to them. Now, this is very important to see the irony of it. Now, this is very important in our day and age. Why? Because in our day and age, as Diane Grunfeld points out in another place, the status, the situation has changed dramatically. In other words, even when Rav Kook wrote the last Heter Mechira in 1932, last one he wrote, who was the ultimate law of the land? Who was the ultimate owners? The British. But now there's after 48, who became the ultimate owner of the land? The state of Israel. So the whole shaila is, okay, so now you sold all the land in Israel to an Arab. But who owns the land, bottom line? Just like any other country. In the United States, you own your house. But there's an additional ownership behind your house. What is behind your ownership? What's that? The United States government. The state of Illinois, the United States government, they ultimately have eminent domain. They're ultimately the true owners. It's just by their largesse that we're able to live in the country. We're able to buy our houses. But really, it shouldn't be that. But really, the ownership ultimately is the United States government. So therefore, after 48, who's the ultimate owner of the state of Israel? The Knesset, whoever, the government. So why does the sale to an Arab work? It's just one layer of sale. Beneath that, there's the bedrock. What's the bedrock? The state. So in order to answer that, they have to say that Dina the Malchus Adina doesn't apply in the state of Israel, that each Jew owns his land, and that there is no super ownership or bedrock ownership of the state. And therefore, when each Jew participates as an individual in the Heter Mechira, in the sale of the land, then that sale is valid. So again, the same irony is particularly necessary to reach in our day and age in order to avoid the question of the ultimate supreme ownership of the state of Israel. Okay, let's go on. A couple of other issues which have to be addressed. One is that there is an issue that the proponents of the Heter Mechira bring up, is that to say that in terms of where you have a Shas Adchak, you have a time where there's difficult monetary straits, one can rely on a single opinion. Even though normally you pass them by majority opinions, but when it's a Shas Adchak, when there's a problem, we rely on a single opinion. And that's true about Chodosh. Chodosh, there's a minority opinion that Chodosh doesn't apply in our day and age. In Chutz La'aretz, I mean. So we rely, since we regard to Shas Adchak in Chutz La'aretz, you know, it's very difficult to live without refraining from Chodosh. So therefore, rely on the Shitas Yochid, on that individual opinion which holds that Chodosh doesn't apply in outside the confines of the land of Israel. However, if that's true, we should apply it to Shemitah as well. Because by Shemitah, we have a Shitas Yochid, an individual opinion that Shemitah in our day and age is optional. It's a Midas Chasidus, the Baal Amor. So let's apply it here as well. Let's follow the Baal Amor and say in the Shas Adchak, we don't have to keep Shemitah. So the poskim reject that. Many poskim reject that. They say, that's true. where the individual opinion was not rejected by the other Rishonim. In other words, if you have 50 people hold one way and one person holds another way, and they never addressed each other, so then, Shas Apak, I might be able to rely on that one individual opinion, as long as it was expressed by a person of weight and stature. But where everybody else came and said, the Razor is wrong, the Baramor is wrong, it's incorrect, and they addressed him and they said he's incorrect, in that case they want to say that's not called the Shitas Yachid, it's not the Shita of one individual, but a Shita Dechuya, a Shita which has been rejected. Now we have a precedent for this in Choshen Mishpat, I want to mention to you. In Choshen Mishpat, there's Halacha, let's say I demand of you $100, and I have 5, 10 poskim who say that my perspective is correct, you owe me $100. You find one posek who says, like you, which in other words, which provides a perspective that you don't owe me the $100. Even though normally you say majority rules, you follow the majority poskim, in Choshen Mishpat there's a special halacha called Kimli. You, the person who are holding on to that $100, can say, well, I hold like that one posek. And you don't have to give me, the money. Because of the principle of Amotzi Mechaver or Lev Araya, I have to prove to you that the halacha is not like that one posek, and of course it's impossible for me to do so. Even though it's 10 against 1, but maybe the one person is right. Never know. But Rabbi Yonison Eibschitz, in his Sefer Tumim, says that, and that's only true about Shitos which are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, or the Shach and Taz, and the other classical commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. But any other Shita which appears even in a Rishon, which was not brought down in Shulchan Aruch or in the Shach and Taz, is considered to have been rejected and is no longer valid. And you can't see Kimli that I hold like that one opinion. So we see that there is such a thing as a rejected Shita as opposed to an individual Shita. So it's possible to say the same thing about the Baal Amor. Especially they add, the Baal Amor himself never said that you can cancel Shemitah based on my opinion. He just presented it as a possibility in learning a sugya that it's only optional, but he never paskin halacha l'maisa. He never wrote a tshuva in which he said, and therefore, Jews in Eretz Yisrael today never don't have to keep Shemitah. It's optional. So therefore, since he never presented it as an actual halachic conclusion, the fact that he expressed it in his commentary on the Talmud would not be sufficient for us to rely on him in this matter. The Rambam and the Ravid would probably be the poskim achronim in Hilchos Shemitah.
Well,
you're right. I don't know. You're right. I don't know how you would define a shita dchuya in something which has no shulchan. There's a shulchan aruch though. It's not true. It isn't your day Hilchos Shemitah. Sure it is. But the other halachas of Tzuyas Bar, sure in Chelek Gimel. I think it's there with the other ones. I'm pretty sure. But we can take a look and see. All right. In any event, now we come to something very important. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chav Dalet. Very, very enigmatic Gemara there. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yanai, who was an Amor in Eretz Yisrael in the 3rd century, told the farmers in Eretz Yisrael, go plant in Shemitah, go plant, which is an Isser Doraisa. You're allowed to plant in Shemitah because the Romans require of us Arnona. Arnona is a tax. Nowadays, the money by Arnona is property tax. But then it's obviously meant some other form of tax because I'm not sure exactly what. But he said you're allowed to plant because of taxes. Why? What kind of heter is that? So there are two understandings there. Rashi says the reason why they're allowed to plant is because Shviz in our day and age is the Rabbanon. So since Shviz is the Rabbanon, so therefore, where they weren't planting for their own benefit, but they were planting for taxes, it was permissible. Tosfos brings down the reason of the Rashi, that Shviz is the Rabbanon, but he says it's possible there's another reason. It's possible it's Pikuach Nefesh. It's possible that there the Romans would have killed them if they didn't pay the taxes. So therefore there was mutazu because of pikuach nefesh. So if you take a look now on page 4 at the bottom, all the way at the bottom, page 5 all the way at the bottom, last paragraph, the early and later protagonists of the Hetam Chiru based their decision on the interpretation of Rashi and the first alternative of that of Tosfos argue as follows. Rabbi Yanai, who, turning to page 6, who not only permitted but even encouraged sowing in the sabbatical year, did so first because Shemitah in his time was only applicable as rabbinic law, and second because the heavy agricultural taxes demanded by the Roman government created extremely difficult economic conditions. If this permission was given in the days of Yanai merely because of heavy taxes, it should be given all the more in our days when the livelihood of thousands of families and perhaps even the economic viability of the Holy Yishuv and the land of Israel is at stake. That's one opinion. The other opinion is, skipping to the next paragraph, against these views, and the Tziva argues as follows. Even according to the explanations of Rashi in the first alternative in Tosfos, the question of loss of income because of the cessation of agricultural work during Shemitah is no valid argument. Besides, this loss belongs to the essence of the mitzvah of Shemitah. However, in the case of our known in the days of Rabbi Yannai, the problem was not loss of income, but actual loss of substance, because Jewish farmers had to pay taxes in kind, although they did not till the ground during Shemitah year. This is why Rabbi Yannai permitted them to work, if one accepts the explanation of Rashi in the first alternative of Tosfos. There is, however, the second explanation of Tosfos, namely that of danger to life. If the farmers had been unable to pay taxes in kind because they did not work during the sabbatical year, they would thereby have infringed the strict laws of Roman occupation authorities and would thus have risked their safety and their very lives. And he brings down here, very interesting, I can't go into it now, but he brings down from Gretz and from Auerbach historical proof that the Roman emperor of that period, who was, it says here, the Roman general, Caracalla, was such a cruel individual that he slaughtered people left and right. In fact, they were very dangerous, and if they would not have planted and paid the taxes, they could have indeed been killed. So, those who bring down this Gemara, the proponents of Heter Mechira, as proof for Heter Mechira, say that we see where extenuating circumstances exist, one can dispense with Shemitah when it's the Rabbanan. The others say, hey, it depends on kind of extenuating circumstances. In our day and age, we do not have any equivalent situation to taxes. Taxes, they were losing not just their income, that they're losing actually their substance in the field. Besides that, they point out that who knows if that was really the reason. It could be the reason was indeed because of pikuach nefesh, because literal danger to life. And that imminent danger to life does not exist in our day and age. What? I didn't see anybody say Anona indicates eminent domain. It's possible, but I don't know. I never heard such a thing. Now, I want to say something about. Now we're going to get to a little bit of Lamaisa. First of all, something about the distortions of the Kibbutz Adati movement. Now, the Kibbutz Adati is a wing of the Mavdal, the left wing of the Mavdal of the Mizrahi, and they had several ideologues in the Kibbutz Adati movement, among which are Tzuriel Admonit and Meir Or. The first one is no longer alive. I don't know about the second one. But they advanced the following rationale, especially the fellow Or. He says that, listen, let's get real. Shemitah in our day and age cannot be fulfilled by the entire nation. Why? Because when the entire nation will fulfill Shemitah, the state of Israel would be an economic ruin. Therefore, nobody should keep Shemitah. Because it's hypocrisy for some people to be Hasidim and Tzadikim on the backs of others. In other words, he says the Poalei Aguda and the Aguda who keep Shemitah are only able to do it because the rest of us don't keep Shemitah. Right? So therefore, they're really being Tzadikim and our Cheshbon. And therefore, if we, the Kibbutz Adati, would keep Shemitah, we would be doing it on the backs of the Chilonim. That, he says, is untenable. What he's saying is absolutely ludicrous. And as a matter of fact, it borders on Kfirah. Because God says, what? If you all keep Shemitah, what am I going to do? I'll double your crop in the sixth year.
Does that bracha apply to Shemitah
Derbanan? Let's find out. The only way to find out is to try it. Maybe it doesn't, but Lamaisa, let's try. It's very likely that Bava will say, this is Dafka, what's impeding the Geula, the fact that we're not keeping Shemitah. It says in Sanhedrin, right, when is the Ben David Ba? Ben Motzoi Shvi is Ben David Ba. Right, maybe Taka, after we keep the first Shemitah. Right, the Senate is being tried by Shem is because of Avon Shemitah. Right, so maybe Dafka, after we keep the first Shemitah, that's when Mashiach comes. I mean, so this is reasoning which is based on lack of emuna. So it's absolutely distorted. But I want to show you something which was just appeared in the Jerusalem Post this week, hot off the press, and seems like a distortion, but really is not such a distortion based on what we saw before. It brings down here, in this article, he brings down in the second column, in the sixth paragraph, the most recent Shemitah year, however, that means the last Shemitah, which was 7 years ago, saw a large number of those affiliated with the religious Zionist camp questioning the validity of the Heter Mechira. In other words, more and more people are not relying on the Heter Mechira. More and more people are buying at Shemitah Committee stores. The argument was since the state had reached the point where leaving the land fallow for a year would not endanger its economy or existence, there's no further need to rely on the Heter. Not so, shouts Amnon Shapira, a member of the religious kibbutz Tirat Tzvi and lectured by Ilan University. In a recent article in the National Religious Party Daily Hatzofer, Shapira argued that those who do not hold by the Heter Mechira are strengthening the hands of those Arabs who are only too happy to intrude on land left fallow by Jews. A strange paradox has been created, Shapira writes. Kibbutz Adati, with its reliance on the Heter Mechira, the chief rabbinate, sells land to a non-Jew, but still tends it, works it, and guards it for the people of Israel. But a growing number of Haredim, because they don't want to rely on the Heter, will be careful to buy produce only from Arabs or from Gentiles abroad. By doing this, they deliver the land to Gentiles not through a legal fiction, but in actuality. Shapira argues that the margin of profitability for farmers has become so low recently due to a lack of government subsidies that more and more Jews are abandoning their fields. He claims that the untended land is slowly taken over by Arabs, and if Shemitah was scrupulously observed, even more land would be available for takeover. So therefore, he goes, I'm skipping down to the last paragraph on this column. As such, Shapira writes, it would be appropriate for the chief rabbis in our day to add their opinion to other important halachic authorities, I know who they are, and do away with Shemitah. But since it is hard to conceive of the cancellation of Shemitah, it becomes necessary to strengthen the Heter Mechira. Now first, you would think, how can a person have in mind to cancel Shemitah altogether? But the answer is, and sound, when I first read it, it seemed like heresy. But the answer is, there is such a precedent, as we mentioned before. One can negate Isurim Drabbanon for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this Shapira fellow, Tainas, he claims that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is being undermined by fields laying fallow and being delivered into the hands of Arabs. So therefore, it's possible, indeed, to accept that. And Marvin mentioned last night that he saw the Reb David Friedman, the Reb David Carliner, said such a thing. That he was against the Heter Mechira. Now, the Heter Mechira doesn't work. But he said, look, if it's really that bad, and Yishuv Aretz is threatened by Shemitah, then let's get together and say, that since Shemitah is only the Rabbanon, that we don't have to keep Shemitah in our day and age because Yishuv Aretz is undermined. Matim Lachos Rabbanon. Okay. So, but in any event, Lamaisa, be that as it may, even though this is not outlandish, it's incorrect. Why is it incorrect? I'm not talking about Rav David Friedman, but I'm talking about Shapira. Why is it incorrect? Because we don't know which Rabbanon's Chazal were Matir because of Yishuv Aretz. Not all the Rabbanons are the same. It's possible that one Drabbanon, yes, the isolated incident of writing a bill of sale on Shabbos through a goy, they might be matir, but a mass national desecration of Shemitah throughout the land of Israel, perhaps Chazal would never have been matir such a thing. Mass desecration of Shemitah is far more difficult and onerous than an isolated incident of a document of sale being written on Shabbos. You know, it's like. We say I don't remember where I read this, but even though opening a store on Shabbos is not as stringent an iser as riding in a car, on the one hand, it's far worse. Chazon Ish says that about opening an umbrella on Shabbos. He says there's no specific iser to open an umbrella on Shabbos, but the public desecration en masse of the spirit of Shabbos is a very grave iser. So something could be true about Shemitah. Perhaps an isolated Rabbanon, one could be matir because of Yishuv Aretz, but not a mass desecration of the holiness and sanctity of a concept such as Shemitah. So what do we do, Lamaisa, in 57, 54? It's prop. Because what they did in the old Shemitahs before the Intifada was that you used to buy Arab fruits. But now it's a big problem. You know why? Because there are no supervisors. It's hard to supervise. It brings an idea from Rabbi Yoel Schwartz that there's no guarantee when you buy from an Arab nowadays that you're really buying from an Arab. The Arab could have gone to some Jewish meshek, to some Jewish farm, taken produce, and presented now as being my produce. And since there's no suit, and people can't supervise, he brings down here, if you look at the top paragraph in the last column, of where this problem, the Eid HaRedis has been negotiating with the IDF about the possibility of supervising fields with helicopters. It would be, in an understatement, Shem Schwartz says, it would be very difficult to supervise from above. So therefore, it's a problem. There's not, the Arab produce is hard to supervise and ensure that it's truly Shemitah problem-free in our day and age. So what do you do? So there are two Eitzahs which are brought down here. One of them is Rabbi Schwartz's Eitzah. He's involved with a new technology being used in Gush Katif, which is in Gaza. So that in Gush Katif, they grow plants, it's all described here, in sacks of dirt which are held above the ground in hothouses. So this is, perhaps it's free of Shemitah, A, because it's not grown directly in the ground, and B, because it's an Aza. And Aza, according to many poskim, is not part of Eretz Yisrael in terms of Shemitah, right? Because it wasn't never conquered before by the Jews. There are always these Palestinians there. It used to be called the Philistines. Now they're called the Palestinians. But they're always there, so therefore it might not be part of Eretz Yisrael. The problem is, of course, that there's not enough. Oh, and by the way, there's an added advantage. These vegetables which come from there bug-free because of the way they grow them. But in any event, but there's not enough there. Not enough for all the land of Israel. So what is another Eitzah? Another Eitzah is brought down here for Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, who's the head of the Chief Rabbinate Shemitah Committee. And what he says, in brief, what he's trying to bring about on a mass scale, which used to be done in a limited scale in previous years, is that crops grow in Shemitah, even in land which is left fallow. It's just that you're not allowed to maintain them and harvest them as your crop. Let's read this inside. He says, in the last column, in the fourth paragraph, Ariel is a leading proponent of the Otzar Beis Din. Another halachic formulation enables Jews to work their fields but does not require them to sell their land to non-Jews. The Torah's injunction of Shemitah states that not only must the land remain fallow in the seventh year, but everything that grows on it is ownerless property. As a result, everyone may freely partake of the produce. With the Otzar Beis Din, kibbutzim and moshavim declare all their produce ownerless. This produce is then taken over by a rabbinical court or Beis Din, which is responsible for its distribution. The farmer is only compensated for his time and watering costs. During Shemitah, thus becomes permissible to maintain existing crops, but not to plant anything else. There is a significant difference between the Otzar Beis Din and the Heter. While with the Heter, the land is no longer in Jewish hands and the farmer can plant and reap as usual, with the Otzar Beis Din, the land remains under Jewish ownership. As a result, the farmer cannot plant and can only do the work needed to maintain his crops. The Otzar Beis Din merely provides him with a mechanism through which he can distribute produce from the crops that were maintained in a logically acceptable manner. Instead of having individuals going to the fields to collect produce, as the Torah provides for, the Otzar Beis Din brings the ownerless fields, in a sense, to the people. True, Ariel admits, this too involves a bit of legal fiction. But he maintains it is better than the Heter Mechir because it does not entail the sale, fictional or otherwise, of any part of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews, which, of course, makes it much, much better. Although during the batch mitzvah, the Otzar Beis Din was used rather sparingly, this year we receive a gigantic push because Tnuva will be distributing certain vegetables and fruits from farmers who have adopted this method. And this is very good. This way, all the problems of Shemitah are avoided in a logically acceptable manner. Now, just to really sum up, if you take a look at the last page, it's much too much for me to read with you inside, but there are a lot of tables which describe this. I want to describe the halacha l'maisa. The chief rabbinate in the bottom circular describes what it allows during Shemitah and doesn't allow during Shemitah. And essentially what it comes down to is melachos d'oraisa are forbidden even subsequent to the Heter Mechira because of the possibility that we mentioned before that only the peros lose their kedusha, not the land. This is discussed at length by Rav Zevin in his book Le'or Halacha about the Heter Mechira. However, there are two important things to remember about Shemitah. There are two different things which happen to fruits which are planted in Shemitah, or rather which grow during Shemitah. Fruits which grow on a tree during Shemitah are holy. They have the sanctity of Shemitah. That means they have to be eaten and not used for any other purpose. And anything which is left over from the fruit cannot just be thrown away. It has to be kept b'kedusha until it rots. Only then can it be thrown away, and then b'derech kavod in a nice way, not in a disgusting way. Vegetables and grain which grows during Shemitah in Jewish land is prohibited for consumption, midrabanan, altogether. You're not allowed to eat it, period. That's called svichin. Midaraisa it's mutter. Midrabanan it's for prohibited. Not allowed to eat it at all. Fruit, yes. Vegetables and grain, not. So what do they do in order to prevent these from svichin? It's a monumental problem. It means any grain which grows after Shemitah, or any vegetables which grow after Shemitah begins, are forbidden to eat the entire year. Grain is drabanan. Svichin is all drabanan. Midaraisa, everything has kedusha shvis. You derive everything as sanctity of Shemitah, and you have to eat the grain and the vegetables with kedusha, like we mentioned before. You have to eat it, not use it for any other purpose. And also, when you discard it, you have to discard it in a respectful manner. But midrabanan, what? Midaraisa, that's what tzvichin means. Midrabanan, tzvichin are osur. Midrabanan, even stuff which grew by itself, vegetables or grain are forbidden for consumption. Why? Because they had people in the old days who would plant during Shemitah, and they say, oh, it grew by itself. I don't know, it got there. It just happened to grow. So therefore, they made a blanket iser on any grain which grew during Shemitah. So therefore, how do you avoid it? You have to plant in a way that it begins by grain, you have to plant at least 3 days before Rosh Hashanah. Because I think it's 3 days. I don't remember exactly. But because then, as long as it sprouts, roots in the ground, which I believe takes 3 days, then, 2 more minutes, wait for me. Then, as long as it sprouts before Shemitah begins, it's not considered to be Svichin of Shvi'is. So it sprouts means, from the seed, roots start forming in the ground, which, if I recall correctly, somewhere on this page, it says takes 3 days. Yeah, here, oh no, vegetables take 3 days. If you take a look here, it says, on the top right, top left, Yerek, you plant vegetables 3 days before Rosh Hashanah, Kadeshi Kolid Rishishis, in order that it takes root during the sixth year. Tvua v'kidneos, grain and legumes, Yagil Shlish Kidulam, Lifnei Rosh Hashanah, they have to reach a third of their growth before Rosh Hashanah. To plant after this is forbidden, unless you plant in a Shinui. Chazanish explains what the Shinui is that you plant something which is not normally planted in such a field. Such as you plant barley in a field of wheat, or lentils in a field of barley, then even if you plant right up till Rosh Hashanah, that's okay, then that doesn't have the Isser of Svichim. But anything planted during Shemitah, or anything which did not begin growing before Shemitah begins, is prohibited on Shemitah. Prohibited because of Isser Svichim, unless it's fruit. So, this is of course only true if you don't hold the Heter Mechira. If you hold the Heter Mechira, all this is considered to be stuff which grew in the land of a goy, and therefore there is no Isser Svichim whatsoever. But if it grows in Jewish land, then there is this problem of Isser Svichin and Kedusha Shvi'is, and therefore they make sure that whatever planting they do well in advance in order to make sure that there is no problem of Svichin with any of these crops when it comes to Shemitah. Lemaisa, in Chutz Laaretz, you cannot eat any produce grown in Eretz Yisrael during the ensuing couple of years unless it has very reliable hashgacha, such as an OU, an OK, a Kafke, CRC, because otherwise you are liable to run into the problem of Isser Svichin or Kedusha Shvi'is, which will create grave headaches for you. If it's done with an Otzer Basin, that's okay. If it's under reliable Ashkocha and it's done by an Otzer Basin, that's okay, but that will only work if Isser Svichin, the Otzer Basin only works by crops which do not have the Isser of Svichin already on them. Once the crops do not have Isser Svichim, in other words, for instance, if you have a vegetable, which you did plant 3 days before Rosh Hashanah, and then the rest of it grows during Rosh Hashanah, it has Kedusha Shvi'is. It just doesn't have the Isser Svichim. So you still have to have all the Kedusha Shvi'is involved with it. That means you yourself are not allowed to work the land unless you work under the auspices of a basin, such as the Otzer basin. So therefore, that would still be required for vegetables which started sprouting before Rosh Hashanah, as long as they grew primarily during Shemitah. And therefore, when they're harvested, you can only harvest under the auspices of the Otzer Basin. It has the sanctity of Shemitah, and you're not allowed to discard it just like that, and all that kind of stuff. The Isser Svichin doesn't apply, and you're allowed to purchase it on an open market. Were it not to be harvested under an Otzer Basin, there would be an Isser of Schora Bepeor Shvi'is. The person who owns the field in which the crops grew, if it's not allowed to harvest the fruit and sell it in the regular fashion. I didn't mention that, it's very important. You're not allowed, there's an Isser of Schor of doing business with Peir Shemitah, which can only be circumvented with the Otzer Basin procedure, unless you hold the Heter Mechira, and that's where the Otzer Basin kicks in, with fruit, which is not Svichin, which has Kedusha Shvi'is, in order that it can be sold in a normal fashion by Tenuva on the marketplace. All right, they're getting on my back already, so I'll have to stop here.